Today's passage is written by this person called Paul, who was, the Bible records, one of Jesus' most ardent followers. He was Jesus' most committed follower. However, this wasn't always the case. Okay? The Bible tells us that at one time his name was Saul, and he was crusader extraordinaire against Christians. Okay? He did everything possible to make the lives of Christians at that time miserable. He was around when the first Christian was murdered. Not only that, his life's goal was to go from house to house. Say, are you a Christian? If you're a Christian, grab them out of their house and take them to jail. Yeah. Fortunately, we don't live in that kind of society today. Not only that, he didn't even do this in his city. He asked for permission to go to other cities and do this. Okay? And while he was on his way to another city, he has this dramatic encounter with Christ where his life is changed, and suddenly, because of this encounter, he moves from becoming this crusader against Christianity to becoming one of the most powerful exponents or protectors of the Christian faith. He went about ruthlessly prosecuting Christians in the beginning, and then he moved to a place where his life was all about sharing the very gospel that till then he was persecuting. His writings, in fact, share with us how he was given 39 lashings on 5 different occasions. It says he was beaten with rods, stoned, shipwrecked, he often went without food, and he was jailed for a long time. Look at the irony. From jailing people for being Christians to be on multiple occasions because he was preaching about Jesus. And I couldn't help and wonder how did this transformation happen from Saul the persecutor to Paul the apostle of Jesus. I think despite his actions against Christians, Paul was able to see the God of the Bible, that is Jesus, who died for him on the cross and paid the price for everything that he ever did against the believers. I believe that God, because Paul was able to see what God did for him, he was able to make this full 180 degrees turn from being Saul to Paul. But this didn't come for free. He knew that Christ had paid a heavy price on the cross to pay for every sin of his, to pay for every time Saul had committed a sin against Christians. I think Paul understood that Christ had taken away the sins that he had committed against Christians. And I'm imagining Paul is sitting in a room with the people who he had jailed. And he's feeling this sense of, actually, what did these people really do wrong? And then suddenly, he's wondering, how are they going to respond to him? But he could be confident about the fact that God didn't look at him based on his past actions because of Jesus. In fact, this is what Paul says. He says, "For I am the least of the apostles, and I am unworthy to be called an apostle because I persecuted the church of God." You can see that Paul was very well aware of what he had done. And Paul's response is beautiful. And I think it's the same response that he reminds us of. He spoke about a continuing debt to love others because he could never make right for all the sins that he had committed against Christians. I would like to believe that having known all that he had done, and having known that God had died for everything that he had ever done, his only response could be a continuous debt of gratitude unto the very one who had died for his sins. And I'm just wondering, today morning we sang that Christ has done for us. And we spoke about saying that this kind of love demands a response. However, unfortunately, at times, me being number one, I think our understanding of love is very cinematic in nature. Okay, there are strings attached. It's an emotion. It's about love that you give or stuff that you do when you're feeling good. And it's about stuff that you do only to those who are good to you. When last did cinema ever say that love means not harming your neighbor? When did cinema ever say that love is a debt that you owe others apart from your spouse or your parents? And I think the biblical response of love is so beautiful, because the biblical take on love is raw, it's engaging, it's something that demands a response even when situations are less than ideal. The lady who we saw in today's video had an option. She still had an option to walk away from that relationship. But she chose to stay there and engage with the person. You watch her carrying him up the stairs. The video says that it was something that challenged her, it pushed her. But she stood there and she still chose to love. And I think that's what the biblical response to God's love is. It's a love that demands that we respond to others the same way Christ loved us. I think I would interpret what Paul is saying by this whole element of continuing to love others is saying that love I show to my neighbor isn't a favor that I'm doing to a person, but a response to the love and forgiveness that I myself have received from Christ. Yeah? And I think sometimes when I spend time with Levia, okay, and I've played with her, taken her out to the garden, etc., and when we come back, she throws a tantrum. And I'm like, really, after all I've done? But the Bible says that very thought process of mine of saying that love is a favor is incorrect. Yeah? I think even as I was preparing for today, I think God was really challenging the way my very understanding of love is. Yeah? And I think go through this, I'm just going to share a little bit about how God has been challenging me a little later in today's sermon. So let's look at the second element. It says, love is the fulfillment of the law. I'm willing to bet that Paul's paradigm of love would have been shaped by Christ's paradigm of love. Okay? And here are some passages that really help us understand what was Christ's paradigm of love. And here it goes. It says, what happened was that one of Jesus' enemies when Jesus was on planet Earth was engaging with Jesus. And he was ironically a teacher of the law. And he walks up to Jesus and he says, Jesus, which is the greatest commandment? And Jesus turns to him and says, here it is. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. So basically, the law said, don't steal. Don't lie, don't commit adultery, don't covet. And Jesus was saying, doing all these things basically means one thing. It means loving your neighbor. Yeah. Now, all of us are sitting here and we're probably saying, adultery, nah, not applicable to me. Stealing, probably in school somebody's rubber, but probably nothing after that. Murder, I'd be in jail, right? And this is how people understood the commandments in the Old Testament as well. Until Jesus came along and he challenged their very understanding of these commandments. I think the law was totally misunderstood by the people at that time. And to be honest, before Saul became Paul, he also misunderstood the law. Yeah? But the minute he engaged with Jesus, or rather Jesus engaged with him, he realized that obeying the law actually means loving your neighbor as yourself. And you know, we spoke about Paul going through those lashings, etc., etc. You know why he went through all those? He was going through that because he wanted to go to another place and tell another people of Jesus. And he got thrashed and he said, that's okay, this is done, I'm going to another place, I'm going to tell them about Jesus. Yeah, his response to this love from Jesus forced him or compelled him to go places and share with them about the love that he has received from Jesus. So let's look at how we can really engage love your neighbor. How do you really go about this? I'm going to put up a quote over there. I think I'm equally guilty of this. Yeah. I think Paul knew I was going to think like this, and so he really challenged it. And this is what he says. He says, love your neighbor. Now, interestingly, this is what the law talks about, love your neighbor. It says, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. Do not hold a grudge or take revenge among any of your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. So I think a few years ago, Ruchi and myself were driving up to Mahabaleshwar, and she's going to have a chuckle that I'm sharing this, but anyway, we were driving up to Mahabaleshwar, and we were going out for a holiday, and we were up on the ghats, doing a decent speed, not really going very fast, and I was buckled in, Ruchi was buckled in, Levya was buckled in, and on the ghat, ahead of me hit their brakes, okay, and so did I. And my heart nearly sank because I thought I was going to hit that person. I had barely recovered from the relief that I hadn't hit the person in front when I heard the screeching sound behind. And my heart sank again. And I look into the rearview mirror and I'm like, please don't hit me. But the response was, we got rammed from behind. And I think my heart still starts beating fast when I remember this situation. I think the first thing that we did was we looked back to see if Levia was safe. Okay, and she was not batting an eyelid. But we knew stuff had happened to the car. Yeah, and we got out, and as we expected, the car. And to be honest, we really got out and we had a bad fight with the driver and his father, who were following us. Now, I missed mentioning this, but the car was a Maruti 800 that was over 25 years old. Yeah? And my first thing to him was like, should you even be driving this car? Like, who allows you to even have the keys of this car? But what annoyed me even more was that he was totally unrepentant. He said, I hit the brakes, what more do you expect me to do? And that really cheesed us off. And we said, okay, you have to pay for the repairs. And he was like, I hit the brakes. I'm not paying for any repairs. Okay? So you can imagine my emotional state was not la, 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 la at this point of time. Blowing gas out of my ears. We said, fine, let's decide this by going to the police station. He said, yeah, okay, let's go to the police station. So we get into our car. And before we could respond, he had got into his car, overtook us, and ran for it. Okay? Now, being a local, before I could respond, he had gone in the by lanes of Mahabaleshwar, and I never saw him again. A terrible start to our holiday. And what I'm going to about to say is by no way credit to me. But I think God really led me to forgive and bless the person there and then. And to be honest, it's not something that I've done before that. And to be honest, it's something I've struggled to do after that. But God enabled me to do it at that point of time. But the story doesn't end there. Last December, we went back to Mahabaleshwar. And we chatted about this incident. And the holiday ended without any incident. And we were driving down. And then there's this car that's ahead of us driving really slowly. Guess who it was? I'd be lying if to say that I was not tempted to. I'd also be lying to say that revenge wasn't on my mind. I thought I'll go and round him, stop him and say, hello, we meet again. I imagined his response saying, oopsie, now I'm caught. But I think at that point of time, I think God reminded me saying that I had chosen not to hold that grudge against him 2 years ago. And I think at that point of time, better sense prevailed. I overtook him, went on our way, and we chose to let the incident and bygones be bygones. Having said that, a lot of others in this room have sat in the car with me and seen me struggle to love my fellow drivers. Yeah? My point is that I need God's grace to keep loving my neighbors in this way, which is to be able to release forgiveness and not hold a grudge. I think love demands that we release forgiveness and the sense of somebody owing me something. Because imagine, after all Christ has done for us, how much more do we then owe him? I think when I hold a grudge against my neighbor, I'm not releasing them from what I think they owe me. But realistically, I should be forgiving them out of this debt of love to what I owe to Christ for what he's done for me. And I think being working professional and artists, I think on a daily basis, we will engage with our co-workers and have situations where we would be in a situation to choose whether we want to hold a grudge against somebody or let it go. And maybe this would be a good point for us to step back and take a moment and say, Lord, I know you didn't hold a grudge against me on the cross. And would you enable me to release that similar kind of forgiveness to others who I engage with? I'm going to quickly move along, and I think when Jesus was really talking about this whole element of loving your neighbor, and he was talking about do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not steal, do not covet, they all thought of these commands as the way sometimes we do. And we think that we are not guilty of any of these. But then Jesus walks up to them and he says, you know what do not murder means? It means that if you've called somebody a fool, it's almost equal to that. In fact, it is equal to that. Not only that, he says when talking about adultery, he says even if you look at a woman with lust in your eyes, you've committed adultery. I can't tell you how many times I have said mean things about friends, neighbors, and co-workers. I can't tell you how many times in the past I viewed pornography and I fantasized about women. Jesus, I would stand here before you, guilty of murder and adultery in front of the eyes of God. The Bible also says, do not steal or do not defraud your neighbor. And as I was thinking about this and preparing for this, I couldn't help but ask myself, when was the last time I denied a colleague credit for something they have done? Or when was the last time I stole a colleague's idea at work? About do not covet, I would be sitting here all my life if I were to write down the number of situations I've been jealous about somebody's look, somebody else's pay, their financial situation, their job, their talent, their voice, etc., etc., etc. And I think you would agree with me that all these things bring a lot of pain and hurt and strife and grief in a relationship. And that's when I think love is more than an emotion, because choosing is to be able to deal with the way we engage with those who hurt us or those around us cannot be an emotional response. It's something far deeper than that, and it's only a response to the love that we have really received from God. I think a few more things that I'd just quickly like to share with us is Jesus told the story of a man who was going from one town to another. He was attacked by robbers. He was left badly hurt and injured. And it says that a priest and a religious person saw him, but chose to walk by and not helping him. However, there was somebody else who passed him by called a Samaritan, who in that time's age was basically a Samaritan was the number one enemy of that. But that Samaritan still chose to stop there, care for this person's wound, take him to a shelter, look after him, and even tell the shelter owner, please take care of him for another day. I'm going to come back and pay you for your services. And when Jesus tells this story, he says, which of these three people do you think considered this man as his neighbor? And the obvious response is the Samaritan, who was actually the person who was sort of hated by the group of people who was injured. I think so far we've talked about love as failing to love, but I think this situation talks about omitting to love. And I think this incident with the Samaritan can be categorized as omitting to love. And as I prepared for this sermon, I realized omitting to love is something that I'm very guilty of. In a huge busy city like Mumbai, we stay in our societies and buildings which are very safe and far away from the ghettos where people who have very little and living in abject poverty and sickness live. And sometimes it's very easy for me to be ignorant or indifferent to everything that they are going through. And I think I'm really grateful that God is enabling us as a community to grow in being more engaged with people like this through the Aruna Project, where we are working with who's working for the rehabilitation of commercial sex workers, and God is enabling us to spend our time, our money, and our talent to be able to be a blessing to these people. But I also know that Anand always says that as a church, we primarily exist to be able to reach out to the influential people of our society. Just the other day, there was a story of this high-ranking police official who took his life because he couldn't deal with struggling with cancer anymore. And I think just as much as our neighbors are those in the slum areas, I think our neighbors are also influential, well-doing people who are struggling with emotional sickness issues, and they're staying in their homes without anybody reaching out to them, and they're choosing to take their lives just because somebody is not loving his or her neighbor. Even as we end today, allow me to just speak to some of us here who probably are engaging with Jesus for the first time, and are explorers of Jesus. And I'm part of the learning and development team of my organization, and recently we were doing a training on management or team management or people management for the mid-management individuals. And they went through the whole training and they said, wow, it's great, etc. But their reservation was, why should we apply everything that you're asking us to when the top management doesn't apply to us? They need this training first. And maybe even as you heard this verse from the Bible today, maybe you had some reservations. Maybe you had reservations saying like, the love that I've experienced has always come with strings attached. Maybe your experience has been, I've always been at the receiving end of harm from others. Maybe what we shared today resonates with you, but your response is saying, I don't think I have it within me to even love like this, though it absolutely makes sense to me. And even as we are celebrating Mother's Day today, and we're reminiscing on everything that our mothers have done for us, perhaps you're thinking, I don't think even a lifetime is enough for me to be able to respond to the amount of love my mother's given me. Perhaps your response is, if I don't think I can ever pay that debt back to my mother for her love, how do you expect me to ever proactively love those who are harming me? I want to tell you that Jesus went to the cross and he was humiliated, abused, harmed, hurt, everything. But he went there because that is the depth of his love for you. And I want to tell you that perhaps you haven't been loved like this or you've not experienced it. But if you're willing to engage with Jesus, I assure you that in this engagement process with Jesus, you will experience love that's beautiful and selfless and sacrificial. Jesus considers you and me as his neighbors, but he chose not to be indifferent to us. In fact, he fully engaged with us, so much so that his love and his sense of wanting to engage with us drove him to the cross to pay for our sins. I'm not sure of your life situation. Perhaps you've been badly abused, rejected, hurt. But I want to tell you that Jesus is deeply engaged and enabling you to experience this love. And he will empower you to be able to love people the way he has asked us to in the Bible. I also want to quickly engage with some of us here who are followers of Jesus. And you're probably thinking to yourself, sure, I have every reason not to love my neighbors as myself. But so did Jesus. And he didn't flinch a minute when it came to going through the cross. In fact, the Bible says that when we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He didn't say, you all take one step and then I'll take five. When we were at minus 100, he still stepped up to a positive 100 for us. And I think the only response to this love that we have received from Christ, where he died for our past, our present, and our future sins, can be gratitude to the Savior for what he's done for us. Gratitude displayed by loving our neighbors, irrespective of the situation. I cannot say I love God until I love my neighbor the way God has loved me. But realistically, we can't love this way in our own strength. And I think that's why this passage, which is a description of how Christ loved us, is something that we need to be able to experience, but that experience needs to overflow into showing that kind of similar love for others. I think we must acknowledge the fact that we deeply, deeply need God's grace to be able to love our neighbors. I know I needed it today while driving to church as well. And I'm just going to end with saying that I think we must decrease so that he may increase and so that we may grow in learning to love our neighbors the way Christ loved us.